It is Friday, August 2nd, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art presents Angels and Tomboys, Girlhood in the 19th Century. This exhibition includes approximately 70 masterworks, including pieces by John Singer Sargent, Winslow Homer, Mary Cassatt, and others. Tickets and more information online at crystalbridges.org. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
On this edition of Ozarks at Large, we mark the third anniversary of our daily program.
To celebrate the occasion, we follow the tradition we established with our previous two anniversary shows by devoting most of the program to stories related to the traditional anniversary gift for the appropriate anniversary.
So today we have stories connected to leather, a saddle maker in Prairie Grove, a cobbler in Fayetteville, and more.
But first, today is the last day Congress meets before taking a month off for the August recess, and the fate of the Farm Bill is in limbo. In July, both the Senate and House passed separate versions of the bill, but the House, without the support of a single Democrat, removed all funding for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. They did so after failing to pass a bill including SNAP funding. Every Arkansas representative in Washington voted for that version except Tom Cotton. Senator John Bozeman says moving forward, Congress will try to reconcile the two pieces of legislation in conference and says it needs to include food assistance.
And I think everybody working really hard can come to agreement and get something that is good for farmers, good for consumers, good for those that are dependent on food stamps, and then also something that's very good for the American taxpayer.
U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack says splitting SNAP funding from the Farm Bill is a mistake and that the two are interconnected for a reason.
They basically enable those families to buy more at their grocery store, and because they can buy more at their grocery store, that helps to support all of the jobs in the supply chain from the moment something is sold at the grocery store all the way back to it being shelved, it being packaged, it being processed, it being trucked, and it being produced. That's one of the reasons why, if you look at what happens to a dollar spent in a grocery store, 15 to 16 cents of every dollar that's spent ultimately finds its way back in a farmer's pocket.
If a reconciled version of the bill is not passed by October 1st, food assistance, research grants to universities, crop insurance, and subsidies will revert to levels set in the 1940s. That could lead to higher prices for common commodities like milk.
Congressman Tim Griffin says he met yesterday with representatives of the federal agency that oversees pipeline safety. The Republican from Arkansas' 2nd District wants more information about how to interpret data from inspections done before the ExxonMobil pipeline ruptured in March, spilling more than 150,000 gallons of raw crude in Mayflower.
Most of the questions at this point relate to what was detected and why was a manufacturing flaw not detected, and what does that say about the inspection methodology that is employed by ExxonMobil and PHMSA?
PHMSA is the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration. Griffin has been given the raw data of the two inspections, but says he's growing impatient with delays in providing more explanations about what the data means. Meanwhile, the full report on the inspection of the section of pipe that broke has now been released. Glenn Hooks with the Sierra Club says it offers more insight than had been hinted at by the oil company.
It looks like that Exxon's summary of the report that they released a while back focused largely on some alleged manufacturing defects by a company in the 1940s. And the actual report seems to emphasize what we've been saying all along, that this pipe was not designed for the stress of pumping thick tar sands oil at high heat and high pressure in a south-north direction. I mean, if you do all that in a 65-year-old pipeline that was designed to handle a much lighter fluid, it's bound to cause some problems.
The Sierra Club, along with Griffin, Central Arkansas Water, and local mayors, are wanting the pipeline moved outside of the Lake Maumelle watershed, which is the region's primary source of drinking water.
New wayfinding signs will soon be installed in the cities across Northwest Arkansas. The pilot project is a partnership among the cities and the Northwest Arkansas Council. Robert Smith is the communication specialist for the council.
So what people will see this month is about 60 signs in the 7 cities. Over the course of the next few years, really, you'll see another 200 signs go up. Five of the seven cities have decided to put up all of their signs. So there's this initial pilot project that is the 60 signs, and then most of the rest will be up before the end of this year, and then you'll see a total of 260 signs.
The pilot project is being paid for by a grant from the Walton Family Foundation. Smith says that while most residents in the area know where Arvest Ballpark is in Springdale or how to get to Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville, the signs will point to other destinations such as the Shiloh Museum of Ozark History, the Rogers Aquatic Park, and city halls and parks throughout the area. But he says that the signs will also be helpful for visitors to the area as well.
It's really a confidence builder. You feel a little bit like an insider when you go to a place and you know you can easily move from point A to point B. The hope is that you go back to where you're from and you talk about that experience, and that positive experience, that ease in getting from point A to point B will convince others to visit Northwest Arkansas.
Cities participating in the program include Bentonville, Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, Eureka Springs, Lowell, Solemn Springs, and Bella Vista.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals returned home last night and ended their losing streak. The Naturals defeated the Tulsa Drillers 5-3 in the first of a four-game set that continues tonight at Arvest Ballpark.
Partly cloudy tonight, 40% chance of rain in Northwest Arkansas. It's a 30% chance for the Arkansas River Valley. Lows throughout the region around 75. Tomorrow, same thing, 40% chance of rain in Northwest Arkansas, 30% chance of showers for the Arkansas River Valley. Highs will be in the lower 90s tomorrow afternoon in Northwest Arkansas, around 98 for the River Valley. And Saturday night, partly cloudy, slight chance of rain, lows from 72 to 76.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Happy anniversary.
Yes, happy anniversary to you as well. Yeah. It is our third anniversary of being a daily show.
And what we have done with the first and second anniversary, and what we're doing with this, is taking the traditional gift for an anniversary and basing our stories on that.
Yep. So first year we did paper, second year we did cotton, this year we are doing leather.
Paper, we had a lot of ideas.
Uh-huh.
Cotton, it came together. And leather, once we got some momentum.
It definitely came together, yes. But it was difficult to find ideas, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The first piece on this show kind of ties everything together and kind of ties together what Ozarks at Large, I think, tries to do. Jim Nelson moved to Northwest Arkansas along with his wife, Susan, nearly 40 years ago. They came here from Minneapolis, St. Paul. They met in school at KU, mm-hmm, in Lawrence. Then Jim got his MFA in drawing and art at Syracuse. And when they were young, still in their 20s, they visited Eureka Springs. It was late summer. Now, back in the mid-70s, early in mid-70s, late summer was when Eureka Springs was about to go to bed.
It was a true vacation place.
And I mean,
place.
Yeah. You know, there was nothing really going on after Labor Day, really. And that's when they visited. But Jim said they fell in love with it anyway.
But at the same time, having looked at it, I thought, gosh, this place is wonderful, man. This has got some potential. And there just wasn't a whole lot going on. There were still actual little town businesses that existed in the downtown historic district that have been long gone, but they were there at that time. And, I mean, rents were real cheap, and it was just pretty easy to get started on doing something. So anyway, we ended up wanting to be there, but ended up in Fayetteville on Dixon Street, where Flying Possum ended up.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
And we started that shop in October. I think we opened in September or October of 74 and ran it with the idea that we were going to also have the next year have another leather shop in Eureka Springs. We were going to start. We were
young. That's very ambitious.
Very ambitious. We were young and energetic, and it just seemed like, yeah, well, let's do that. Right before we were going to do the Eureka shop, the people that we had lined up to run this decided to join Hare Krishna. And so they went to California, and we ended up moving to Eureka Springs ourselves and starting the shop there.
You have your MFA in painting and drawing.
Right.
So on one hand, I can see how it goes to leather working, because it's, mm-hmm, to a non-artist like myself, mm-hmm, oh, well, they're connected. But are they? I mean,
The connection is simply, to me, it's working with your hands. That's the deal. And just doing handwork. What I do in my work now, I work with wood, and I carve it. And I used to carve the leather or stamp it, and it's very similar. And when I paint or color the wooden wall art that I do now, I use my hands a lot. I use brushes, but I use rags and I use my hands. And that, to me, is direct comes directly from working the way I used to dye belts and other hard leather things. It's the handwork, though. That's the real connection. And I suppose dried pottery or glass or something.
How confident were you as a small business owner?
It wasn't really confidence as much as why not. It was let's see what happens. Let's try this. We had a little bit of money that we were given, just as seed money by my in-laws to get us when we got married, and that's what we used to get going with. Mm-hmm. And it just seemed like we can do this. It's just okay. You make the stuff and then you sell the stuff. And and it was so simple. That's all it's ever really been, and hope that you made enough that you can feed your face.
Eureka Springs is a magnet that attracts a lot of people. Yes. A lot of people think they can come, make a living, and find out it's not easy.
Yes.
And leave. What was it about Eureka that kept you here?
Well, the artists, the diversity, the potential for, at the time, you could start there so inexpensively, there just wasn't a lot of downside. You know, it's different now. It's more expensive to be there. You can't just kind of dabble and see what happens unless you've got some capital to start with. At least that's how I feel about it. It's changed a lot. And I think it's doing very well. It's not exploding the way it was in the 80s and 90s. But it's viable, and I think it always will be. It's an authentic place. People really live there. They live and work, like, and live above where they're working. I mean, it's
not like Carmel, California, where everyone who works there can't afford to live
or
there.
Or Aspen,
right.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's not like that. It's the real deal. And as long as people who come to Eureka Springs and maybe fall in love with the place and decide they've got to be there someday, as long as that continues to happen, I think the town will just be fine. It'll be great.
Jim Nelson now creates wonderful large pieces of art that are made of wood. We'll have more of our conversation on Weekend Ozarks at Large, Sunday morning at 9 on KUAF.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
As we continue our third anniversary show with the theme of leather, up next we have a story about a cobbler.
Yes, you've been gone for the last couple of days,
Antoinette.
But while you were gone, I visited Clarity's Cobbler Shop on mm-hmm. College Avenue here in Fayetteville.
Mm-hmm.
Sweetest people. Uh-huh. I've always taken my own shoes there. You know, I just always have.
I've driven by there a lot. The one I use is in downtown Rogers.
Yeah.
Adorable little couple runs that place closer mm-hmm. to me, but this one's closer to you.
Well, I remember, you know, taking my shoes there last summer, and, you know, a woman walks up and she has, you know, a baby on her hip, and meeting them is just really great. I mean, it's a family-run business, really, really sweet. And here's that story. The door buzzer heard from the workroom of Clarity's Cobbler Shop on College Avenue in Fayetteville. In the 1950s, when the original store, Webb's Shoe Repair, opened, shoes were made quite a bit differently than they are today, with leather soles stitched onto the bottom of the shoe. Stephen Clarity's father bought the shop in 1981. You might notice that I'm saying Clarity, not Clardy. I've always called it Clarty's Cobbler Shop, as I understand many others do as well. Stephen says they don't correct the customers. He bought the shop 4 years ago when his father was undergoing a heart transplant. He drew from his childhood experience of growing up here to master the trade.
Yeah, a lot of the paint on the walls that's not supposed to be there. That's been the nails in the bench here. Yeah, that was our pastime whenever before we could do actual repairs. We thought we were working. Yeah, I grew up here. My dad has owned the shop since he was when he was 18 years old.
Stephen, along with his three brothers, spent many a day fixing shoes. His brother Drew owns and runs Drew Clarity's Shoe Repair in Bentonville. Stephen says that when he was 13, his dad had them sign a contract that said they each had 10% ownership of the shop and had to work 2 days a week. At 16, Stephen went into the medical field, but quickly changed careers when his father became ill. The place is still very much a family business. His wife, Cecilia, works at one bench dyeing leather purses, shoes, and such. Their four children, aged 2, 5-year-old twins, and 7, run around the shop and nap in another room. The oldest, Lexi, wants to be a cobbler when she grows up. A man's black cowboy boot is upside down, about waist high, sitting on a vintage iron shoe holder that's affixed to the floor, allowing Stephen to hammer a sole onto the bottom of the boot. As he does, he talks about the meaning of the word cobbler.
Cobblery, in the Old English term, means to cobble something together, whereas in the cobblers wouldn't just do shoe repair for a living. You could bring in anything to them. They did roofing, they did framing, they did a little bit of plumbing, they would fix anything. And so the term cobble became like a cobblestone, you know, a grouping together of all these different things. And so when Dad opened the shop, he changed the name from shoe repair to a cobbler shop, because we literally have our hands in just about everything. We don't just do shoe and boot repair. We're true cobblers.
Yes, because if you look at these shelves.
His wife, Cecilia, jumps in.
It looks like a bunch of junk, and it looks messy back here, but all this stuff he uses, all of these random pieces and things, he takes it off of broken things that can't be repaired, and then he'll reuse them and cobble something back together. Yes, baby?
Ella's being really mean to Izzy.
You can tell the mood is usually light around Clarity's. While Stephen doesn't plumb, he does do a little bit of everything. In addition to repairing 25 to 50 pair of shoes each day, including Birkenstocks and Chacos, they fix luggage, purses, lawn chairs, umbrellas, belts, watches, leather jackets, and there's even a Bentley parked out back. Stephen and Cecilia are fixing the leather seats. Stephen's favorite thing to work on, however, is a traditional pair of shoes.
A pair of nice dress Allen Edmonds shoes that I'm doing full soles on. And all the businessmen out there know exactly what I'm talking about. Allen Edmonds shoes, just a wonderful brand of shoes. It's one of the only dress shoes still made in America, handmade in America. And they last forever, and they're just a joy to work on because they're meant to be resold over and over.
And his favorite thing to wear.
Tony Lama cowboy boots.
Right.
Personally. And they're also really nice to work on.
And there are a lot of boots around the shop. He picks up a pair of colorful ladies' cowboy boots and takes them over to the stitcher to sew on a new leather sole. Just about every work item is original to the shop, like the workbench Stephen hammered nails into as a child. But this machine, the curved needle stitcher, goes even further back.
My grandmother worked at the shoe store name, but it was in the Campbell Bell building on the square, which is still there. You can see that black sign with the silver lettering Campbell Bell. And they made shoes in there, and they also repaired them. And that was... her first job was early 50s, and the stitcher that's actually right behind you, which I use every day to sew soles on, is the original stitcher from that Campbell Bell building that got brought over here when Webb bought the shop.
He says shoe repairing and making equipment hasn't changed all that much, and that he can still buy parts for the almost 100-year-old machine. It's large and green and looks similar to many sewing machines, but it's called a curved needle because, well, it has a curved needle.
And it curves up through the welt. It's sort of hard to describe this, but curves up through the welt, through the sole, and then creates a stitch, of course. And that's the stitch that you see. If you wear a leather-soled shoe, you can turn it over and see. It's either called it's either stitched on with a curved needle or with a McKay needle. McKay stitches through the actual shoe, and the curved needle is going to stitch through the actual welt, which is on the outside of the shoe.
Stephen previously worked in surgery, where he was taught about safety with sharp objects. He says that cobbling is a bit different. The only profession that you're taught to cut and sew toward yourself, because it gives you a better cut. There's another large green machine against that same wall, with belts of sandpaper. It's the grinder, which Stephen says he tries to fire up just twice a day, as it is very noisy.
Grinder helps me trim the sole to actually fit, because if I just put the sole on there, it's usually too big. And so we trim it off and make it a nice edge. So it looks like almost like it's factory. As close as possible. Same thing with heels. It's then just trim them to fit.
Cecilia, Stephen's wife, has her own workbench, stacked with dozens and dozens of colorful bottles of dye. She's modest about her work, primarily dyeing worn or stained leather bags. But her hand-painted work is fabulous, turning a salmon-colored purse to blue to match a soaked in ink spot, or returning a worn brown or cognac-colored bag back to light new condition.
When I started doing it, I use brushes, and I'm really picky and I'm really detailed. I like to get, you know, I wish we could dip it. Boy, would that make it easy. But no, I like to really get in and get all these nice edges and stuff like that and refinish all this stuff. And, you know, I'll take an acetone, this stuff off of there. But
again, she is modest and truly impressed with her husband's handiwork, saying that he lives up to the standard that her father-in-law kept for so many years. Together, they work on 24,000 items a year, a number they could only calculate by figuring how many red tags, you'll see them attached to everything in the shop, they go through in 1 year. Stephen says just about anything can be repaired and urges people to try to fix their favorite shoes and leather items before tossing them out, commenting that cobbling was one of the first sustainable businesses. No matter how bad the item, don't worry, they'll laugh with you, not at you.
Usually it's very repairable. A seam that's come unsewn, a big rip, there's a dog chew. You know, we've fixed shoes that are literally almost half gone from the dog. And of course, it's always going to look a little like a dog chew, but we can definitely get you back in your favorite pair. A hole in your sole, no pun intended there. We can fill that.
Yeah.
Really, if you have something, what I always tell customers, because they ask me what all we can fix is, hey, I'm on the radio here. Sorry. Don't laugh at me. If you have something that you don't know where else to take it and it's broken and needs to be fixed, we'll probably take a whack at it or maybe fix it.
Stephen and Cecilia Clarity are owners and operators of Clarity's Cobbler Shop on College Avenue in Fayetteville.
Ahead on Ozarks at Large, Jed Clampett inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio, and in about 6 minutes, a visit with Jim Harwell. He makes saddles the old-fashioned way, out of quality leather and one at a time. That's coming up on Ozarks at Large.
Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. KUAF is supported by 121 Digital Marketing, a full-service digital agency helping local businesses with their online presence. Services include reputation and social media management, mobile and desktop website design and management, press releases, search engine marketing, and optimization. 121digitalmarketing.com for more information.
So take heed of the western winds. Take heed of the stormy weather. And yes, there's something you can send back to me. Spanish boots are Spanish leather.
This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, August 2nd, 2013. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
This is our third anniversary of going daily, so we're talking about the traditional third anniversary gift, which is leather. We'll have more stories. A man who makes saddles at Prairie Grove, Jed Clampett, and we'll tell you about that connection in a little while. But here's someone who's going to give us a connection, I think, somehow to leather because of yard sales. Right, Becca Martin Brown?
You know, if I have a choice of things to talk to you about, and for 3 years now I have.
Oh, well.
Longer than that.
Yes, because even before we were a daily show, yes.
But you can't be surprised I'm choosing yard sales. And if it's a yard sale that comes with a dog story.
Oh, you're all over it.
I'm so in. There's a lady in Eureka Springs who has a pet grooming business. Her name is Rachel Bricks.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, she had just been in Eureka Springs for a little while. She was trying to get a dog park started there. And so they had a yard sale at Yards and Yards of Yard Sales to benefit the dog park. And also to kind of celebrate a dog named Percy.
Who's Percy?
Percy looked like a red husky with beagle ears. And according to Rachel, she was the best dog ever. They were together for 13 years.
Aww.
Percy died in July of 2011. But she's the inspiration. She was the inspiration for Rachel training to be a dog groomer. And then the inspiration for the dog park, which they've actually got about half the funding for. Mm-hmm. And the inspiration for the yard sale. She was not the inspiration for Rachel deciding to do a personal yard sale this year. She will, however, accept donations for the dog park at the yard sale.
These yard sales, this is one of many, right? That's the whole concept?
They have 61 sellers on the map for Eureka Springs.
That's a lot of yard sales.
Hence the reason I said many, yes.
And they say they usually have more than 1,000 customers. So if you'd like to go, it's 7 o'clock to 3 o'clock today and tomorrow. I believe you've missed most of today by now, but you could run.
But you got yards and yards tomorrow.
Yards and yards tomorrow. Maps are available at the Chamber of Commerce office at the Village at Pine Mountain in Eureka Springs, at the convenience stores on US 62, at the Eureka Springs Transit Center on US 62, and at the Eureka Springs Historical Museum. There is no cost to attend. You can buy an all-day trolley pass, which is like $3. And you'll have a great time, and I'll probably see you there. Okay. Or if you miss this weekend, it is the 14th annual Bargains Galore on 64. It's 160 miles.
160 miles? I feel like you've told me about this before.
Yes. 160 miles from Fort Smith to BB along US 64. That starts Thursday and continues through August 10th. And you can find out more about it at bargainsgaloreon64.com. Uh-huh. Now, if that's not crazy enough for you, I can up the ante.
I'm not sure I'm ready for this.
The Color Vibe 5K is Saturday in Fayetteville.
Right.
This is where you run a 5K and they shoot non-toxic painted powder at you. According to our writer Kevin Kinder, who wrote about this, about 500 runners at a time will take off from the starting line at the Washington County Fairgrounds and then proceed at their own pace through the various color stations, which weave their way along with the race course through the fairgrounds. And then at the very end, there's a dance party and color throwing extravaganza. This starts at 9 o'clock Saturday at the fairgrounds in Fayetteville. It's $50 to do this, and you can find out more at thecolorvibe.com. Also this weekend, The King and I continues at Rogers Little Theater, 8 o'clock today and tomorrow and 2 o'clock Sunday. Tickets for that start at $16. The 60th annual Decatur Barbecue is Saturday. Fun run at 7 a.m., no paint. Car show from 10 to 3, a parade at 11, pageants at 6:30, and music at 8 o'clock. $3 to park. The rest of it's free.
Not bad. Not bad at all.
Mm-mm.
There is a living history performance and book signing with Nancy Hendricks, who is the author of Senator Hattie Caraway and Arkansas Legacy. This will be at 1 o'clock Saturday at the Fort Smith Museum of History. And there's a program by Susan Young, one of my favorite people in the world, an outreach coordinator at the Shiloh Museum, at 2 o'clock Saturday at Hobbs State Park called Hard to Get There From Here.
All righty. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
There's a couple of round end punches. Hole punches. These are spring punches. One for each.
Jim Harwell has a myriad of awls, punches, scissors, edgers, scratchers, and cutters, categorized on a wall of his workshop in rural Prairie Grove right next to the Illinois River. He uses those tools, all of them, to make custom saddles. He's been making saddles one at a time since he retired from a career in construction several years ago. He didn't enter into this new career lightly. He enrolled in and completed an 8-week one-on-one apprentices course at a saddle-making school in Muscoota, Illinois. This interest in making saddles developed during winter months when he would take saddles off of his horses and begin to take them apart to clean them for the next riding season.
I used to work on old cars and always had parts left over, so I began to wonder if what would happen if I had parts left over on these saddles. It might be a problem. So I thought I would go learn a little bit about it, and I'm not much for going partial, so I just decided to go the whole route.
His teacher at the saddle-making school learned from another saddle-maker, invested in the old-school patient method. When Jim is working on a saddle, he says he'll spend a total of up to 130 hours working just to get the details just right. The first part of the process, making the saddle tree, can take 6 weeks. Think of the tree as the foundation, a chassis of the saddle. This is the form on which everything else will come together. And to make the tree, he meets the horse the eventual saddle will sit on when finished.
You get the tree to fit the horse, and then you start with the leather. To build a saddle, it takes two sides of cowhide for the leather, all the leather that you see. It takes one full sheepskin and a lot of hardware.
Hardware like the buckles, screws, and pins that will hold it and the rigging all together.
From there, we start adding leather, rigging, ground seat. I use an all-leather ground seat, which is what you're sitting on. Most of them use a metal plate and then cover it with leather.
As the work continues, Jim likes to have the customer come in for a sitting. After all, a good saddle is comfortable for both horse and rider. Making a quality saddle can have a tricky timeline. Jim says there are some parts of the process that once you start, you're committed to until that sequence is over, like once the weather is wet and you're putting it on the saddle in progress. And the leather does matter. The better it is, he says, the better that seat you're in all day.
Yes, yes. I use Herman Oak and Wickett and Craig, which are both American-made, American-tanned, is what I prefer. There are a lot of other leathers out there that are a little cheaper, but I really don't, you know, it's kind of like building something out of used material. If you build it out of used stuff, it looks used.
And he treats that leather with respect. Remember all those tools he has on the wall? There is something for every maneuver, for every task, for every job of any size.
We've got the little wicked tool here, this what they call a head knife or a round knife. This is what I cut all my leather with. Cut my parts out.
Now, the shape suggests that it's a rolling sort of motion.
It can roll. You push it straight, or you can roll it. You can, you know, use the tip of it when you're cutting around corners and that sort of thing.
He has custom orders from ranchers who will spend 12 hours a day in a saddle, and from recreational riders who try to get in the saddle every weekend or so. With care, he says, a saddle can last a long time. Recreational riders who clean and oil their custom saddle should be able to leave that saddle to their children and to their grandchildren. And if they've taken care of that saddle, they should be able to see his stamp, a saddle maker's signature that's on his work. While some newer saddles are, like running shoes or bicycles, coming in lighter and lighter varieties, he says the really good saddles that will keep and last have a heft to them. His saddles, because of the good leather and the good rigging, weigh between 45 and 50 pounds. So those old Westerns, when I would watch and they just kind of threw them on the horse, that's not quite accurate?
It's a little bit harder than that sometimes. You get used to it. And once you learn how to throw it on or how to put it on, it's a little bit easier. You've got to get that swing, you know, and get everything moving at one time.
Given his attention to detail, he rubs the edges of the saddle by hand, and his devotion to the tradition of his work, it's not surprising he prefers to do business in person. He does have a website, and he does have a Facebook page, but he says there's no substitute for eye contact when discussing the hows and whys of a custom saddle.
I will answer an email occasionally, but mostly I like to deal with people one-on-one.
Trade shows,
and people come out here, I'll help them out any way I can, show them whatever I can. I like to pass on the information.
Jim Harwell lives and makes saddles on the edge of the Illinois River in rural Prairie Grove. If you want to learn more, you can go to harwellsaddles.com or search for Jim Harwell on Facebook. You can also call him, get directions to his place on Shoemake Crossing Road, and enjoy learning more about his art. This is Ozarks at Large, and on this edition, we are celebrating the third anniversary of the show Going Daily. It is August 2nd, 2013. The show's all about the traditional third anniversary gift, which is leather. And we turn now to Katie Hendrickson. Katie, you came up with an idea that, well, leather's in the name. In fact, that's what it is, right? A name.
Yeah, I kept thinking and thinking of story ideas, and I don't know why, but all of a sudden Lake Leatherwood popped into my head.
In the office, we didn't know why Leatherwood.
Yeah, and you and I are both from Arkansas. Neither of us knew why anything would be named Leatherwood. We had no associations with that word, whether it was a family name or it turns out it's a plant.
Right, and although what you found out is still no one is 100% sure just how the name came about.
No. I mean, it's thought that it comes from a leatherwood shrub, which isn't even very common in our area anymore. But no one knows for sure who actually named the creek that spawned the name of the lake.
You talked to a world-famous source about herbs, Stephen Foster.
Yes.
But you started your conversation with...
I started talking to the director of Parks and Recreation for Eureka Springs. His name is Bruce Levine, and he's actually the one who pointed me in the direction of Stephen Foster as well.
Well, as the best we can figure, Leatherwood is named after the creek that is the main feeder creek into Lake Leatherwood, which is called Leatherwood Creek. And there's two Leatherwood Creeks. There's an East Leatherwood Creek and a West Leatherwood Creek. And East Leatherwood Creek runs through and alongside of Main Street. And West Leatherwood Creek flows into Lake Leatherwood, which was dammed up in 1940 by the Civilian Conservation Corps. The origin of the name Leatherwood, we are not entirely certain of. However, we think that it is named after a small tree, which is more like a shrub, that's called a leatherwood tree.
Bruce directed me to a plant expert and Eureka Springs resident to explain more about exactly what the leatherwood plant is.
My name is Stephen Foster, and I'm an author and photographer specializing in medicinal plants, basically plants used in herbal medicine, and I've done a couple of books on medicinal plants for National Geographic, as well as three Peterson field guides, including a... So living in Eureka Springs, I've been curious over the years about the origin of the name Leatherwood in relationship to Leatherwood Creek or Lake Leatherwood. And so about a year ago, I started looking at what is the origin of leatherwood.
Foster, in all his studies of plant life, had never come across a leatherwood plant in Arkansas. So he found a master's thesis from 1989 at the University of Arkansas, written by Michael E. Murphy, a survey of vascular plants in Carroll County, including the leatherwood.
A plant called leatherwood, Dirca palustris, was listed as being previously collected in Carroll County, but he didn't find it when he did his master's thesis. So I started looking into it a little further. Now, when Michael Murphy did his master's thesis in 1987, he probably looked for common leatherwood, Dirca palustris, in a along the creek bottoms in a riparian, rich, moist woodland. But as it turns out, Dirca decipiens, the new species, is a upland plant that occurs near limestone bluffs on higher ground. My speculation would lead me to believe that somebody long ago, coming down a hillside toward a creek, saw a leatherwood plant up on the hillside and went down to the creek below and decided to name the creek Leatherwood Creek. And that is entirely speculative on my part, but an interesting story nonetheless.
Parks and Recreation Director Bruce Levine has not spotted the leatherwood plant either.
Actually, I have not seen it myself in Carroll County, but hope to see it in the next week or so. But it's a small shrub, 2 to 3 feet tall, has sort of elongated oval leaves that just sort of blend in with the rest of the vegetation. The real unique interesting feature about the plant is, even though it's a woody plant, the stems are extremely pliable, like leather. You can bend it in half and it won't break. So it's something you might notice in the spring, but you'd really have to be looking for it in order to find it.
Bruce Levine, Director of Parks and Recreation of Eureka Springs, talking about the ideas of where Lake Leatherwood gets its name. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Katie Henriksen.
And if you'd like to read more about where the name Leatherwood comes from, you can go to Stephen Foster's website. That's stephenfoster.com/herbalblog. This is Ozarks at Large. It's our third anniversary of going from a weekend-only show to a daily show, so we're celebrating with stories about leather, which is the traditional gift for a third anniversary. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
We're bringing it full circle here.
We are.
Because we started with a conversation with Jim Nelson, who opened a Nelson leather store on Dixon Street in the early 70s. Mm-hmm. Later sold that business to
Bruce Walker,
who opened up Flying Possum.
Mm-hmm, the late Bruce Walker. When we were talking about getting the show together, one of the things that we mentioned is that it would be a Friday, and we like to have musicians on Friday. So I wanted to find a musician somehow connected to leather. And I thought of the Bruce Walker straps that I'd heard about for a long time. He made these patented guitar straps. And I didn't know much about them. Did some digging and found a local musician. I mean, there are plenty of them who have one of the straps. And my understanding with strap is one of the reasons it's patented and it's different is it's a little more comfortable, and I think it eliminates the need to have to like drill a hole in an acoustic guitar to attach your strap. And when I was reading about this, I understand the first series of them were signed and numbered. The first was given to Neil Young, the second to Willie Nelson, and the third went to Jed Clampett, who lives around here still. Mm-hmm. And so I invited him into the Furman Garner Performance Studio to discuss a little bit about his relationship with Bruce.
Bruce Walker and the Flying Possum, he and I met in 1976 when I first started playing at the Old Town Club in the Mountain Inn. And Bruce came in there and saw me one night. And we just hit it off. We were kindred spirits, you know. And he said, you know, I got a little leather shop down here. I do a real nice wheat straw pattern, you know. And anyway, so back then, I've got a couple of guitar straps, and I've got the very first one that he made for me in 76, and then even had some additions. So I still have that one with my other guitar, and the one I have with this guitar is a newer version. It's a little padded thing, and it's still that same thing. But then I have the patented strap, which I use. I keep it at home. I've got a 1939 Gibson guitar. It's very fragile, and you know, it was a gift, so I don't want to put a hole in it, so I use, when I want to play it, I use that strap, because you can put it on without having to put a neck pin in it. You know? And Bruce, you know, we'd just been friends through the years, and of course, I wear Flying Possum sandals, have since 1976, and all my belts are from him. All my leather goods always came from the Possum. And when he came up with this strap, it was his idea. It was a total surprise to me that I would get one, plus besides being number three. But I'm pretty sure Willie got number one, and Neil Young got number two, and I got number three. And it's, you know, it's a wonderful thing.
So you guys were just friends, and you were just lucky enough to get one of the first ones. Now, I've always heard about these straps, you know, this patented Walker strap. What is so unique about it?
It's a wonderful thing. What it does is, down here on the bottom side of your guitar, he makes kind of a loop out of it. It fastens it back on the tail piece back here. Then it kind of loops around and comes here and catches over this and comes over your shoulder. It's a really unique kind of thing. And it's great for, you know, because a lot of people have high-dollar guitars, you know, and they don't want to be putting little, like this one. This is a working guitar here.
Yeah, you have the little peg on it to where you put your strap on.
When I'm on stage, my hands, you know, I may be bending over, I may be doing all this stuff, and I really strap it on. But it's like I say, it's a working guitar. But, you know, guys that spend thousands of dollars, you know, they want to keep them as pristine as possible, and it's real good for that. So works great, and they're still available. And, of course, the standard straps, you know, I've got those, too. I got everything pretty much that I could get from him. It was always good. It still is.
to be one of the first ones to get one of those jobs, and especially in that company of musicians, you were surprised, but did you feel a sense of, I don't know, honor or something?
Well, of course,
to be?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's first of all, you know, that he would even think about me, and you know, of course, we're good friends. But I they're real nice trips, and to get a numbered one from Bruce, and I like number three anyway. Things, good things come in. Major chord comes in three
there
notes.
You go.
You know, and it was quite an honor, and I treasure it. You know, it's something I'll keep for always. And anything that leather's real earthy anyway. You know, and it wears well and stays with you. Number three, as a matter of fact. Oh, it's the third anniversary too, isn't it?
It is our third anniversary,
so,
which
yeah,
is why we have leather.
Well, how about that?
Well, how about that? It works out perfectly.
I love that.
Do you have to do much to take care of the leather strap? Do you need to use oil or anything like that to keep it in good condition, or does it just wear pretty well?
Oh, they wear great. They wear great. You can. They sell something down at the shop called Lexol that you can put on leather products and stuff. But and I do that every now and then on mine. But this one I got in my strap on in my case here. I'm headed for New York tomorrow. I'll be playing it up there. And but I've had it all over the country and. They wear well, they're just good stuff, you know. And I like things that are handmade. I like things that some craftsman made, not something that was, you know, mass-produced, so to
speak.
You know, it's just I like things that they have character to them, you know. Of course, you know, I'm Jed. I'm a little different, you know. But, you know, there's something – There's that feel in this, you know. You can see things, and you can feel things. You hear stuff, you know. You can't see my words, but you can feel them. Just like music, you can't see it, but you can feel it. And I like things that feel good, you know. Whenever I go to buy anything, it has to have a certain feel about it. A friend of mine asked me once about buying a guitar, and he said, "Well, what should I look for, Jed?" And he said, "Well," I said, "Well, find one that feels good, you know." Doesn't matter who makes it or whatever, you know, it's going to have, you know, an appeal to you to start with, but you'll know when you play it. You know, it will either have that ooh, baby feeling or it won't, you know. And that's how I do things. Worked great so far.
And being here in Fayetteville seems to be working for you. You've been here 39 years this August.
It'll be 39 years this August, as a matter of fact.
People have been able to see you playing around here for a long time. You just mentioned you're headed to New York, but you're going to come back. And you mentioned before we start recording that you're working on some new songs. When can people hear you playing around town? Do you have any regular gigs?
I do. I have a regular gig. I play the Pesto Cafe every Tuesday, and it's it's as laid back as I can get. I just kind of sit in the corner and try to be not get anyone's attention, you know, because your ambiance, people, you just want to make a nice environment for people to have dinner, and that's. As musicians, we're supposed to make everyone comfortable and make you feel good, make you relax. You know, music soothes the savage beast. I would be the savage beast that soothes me, you know. And I do that, but I'm doing some other things around town, too. I'm going to revive my Frank Bluebonnet Blues Band. I'll start doing that at a place, a friend of mine here in town called Rocks. I'm going to start doing that on Wednesday, starting August 7th. And it'll be kind of a jam thing that I'll host with some friends of mine. And I do a lot of private parties. Probably 80% of my work is private events, you know. But I can play in people's living rooms. You know, I do a solo, duo, trio, full band, whatever's necessary. You know? And I love being back in Fayetteville. I'm just now starting to get back out and get around and get to know some of the other players again. We got Fayetteville's always had wonderful players. It's just always been a musical mecca. And, you know, and it's just got a good attitude. You know, when we learn here, I was allowed to practice here for all those years while I've been trying to learn to sing and, you know, and do my thing. And it's just a great, great environment for that. You know, it's a learning center anyway. But, yeah, I'll be around. Just and, you know, I'm on Facebook. I got those things. And, of course, at jedclampett.com.
Sure.
And, yeah, I'm back. Good Lord willing and the creek don't rise, I'll be here for the duration.
You brought your guitar with you.
Would you mind
playing a song for me? Tell me what it is.
Can you hear that?
I can.
I wrote this when I was I'd been in Fayetteville, oh, a few weeks, I guess, and I was going to write my parents a letter and let them know that where I was and what I was doing, and I was okay. Of course, I didn't have a stamp or money for one, but anyway, it turned into a song, and it goes like this. I was just thinking about writing you a letter, let you know what's going on. There hasn't been much work and I've lost a little weight, but I'm gonna keep on keeping on. I met a lot of really nice people, there's still quite a few of them left around. I'm not getting very rich, but I'm getting real happy, so I'm writing every word of this down. And when I'm through, I'm sending it to you in a very, very special song. It might make your day just a little bit brighter, and you might want to sing along. Singing 9999999999999999. The ones I love, they miss me. You know I miss them too. But I play a guitar in a traveling band, cause that's what I wanted to do. Though this song, it may sound sad, it's not really sad at all. Cause things are gonna get a whole lot better, and better for us one and all. A new day's gonna be coming my way, and it's gonna be coming soon. But until it does, I'll just keep smiling, and I keep on singing this tune. Singing 9999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999999 9999. Now, when you're down and feeling blue, 'cause everything's going wrong, think about me and remember what I told you. Keep on singing this song, singing
That was Jed Clampett inside the Firman Garner Performance Studio, and you can find out more about this musician at jedclampett.com.
Support for KUAF comes from the University of Arkansas Bookstore, reminding everyone that this weekend is Arkansas's tax-free weekend. The University of Arkansas Bookstore offers a selection of school supplies, textbooks, apparel, and more. Razorback Apparel is also available at the Northwest Arkansas Mall and the Pinnacle Hills Promenade in Rogers. uofastore.com for more information.
KUAF is also supported by Arcom Printing, located on the hillside just east of the Township and College intersections in Fayetteville. Arcom Printing provides printing, copying, and digital output services. ArcomPrinting.com or 444-7771.
The KUAF website giveaway is offering event passes to the Fayetteville Roots Festival August 22nd through the 25th. One winner will receive 2 4-day passes. The package includes the Friends of the Festival backstage concert, late night passes, and tickets to the Roots Festival main stage. The drawing will be next Friday during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. You can register at KUAF.com.
Actually, 2 weeks from today. August 16th.
Oh, I'm sorry. August
That's okay.
16th.
Don't make August go any faster than it is.
I won't.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Tanyard Creek.
Which is?
In Boone County.
And Tanyard Creek because you tan leather.
Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.